charging forward, diving to the goal line. A touchdown and a title for the Patriots.
I can't believe it. I can't believe
it. They have completed the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. And a silver trophy is coming back to New England.
You're listening to the Naked Bootleg Podcast with Evan Lazar and Adam Kirkchen.
This is unequivocally the sweetest.
Welcome into another edition of the Naked Bootleg Podcast. Evan Lazar here. As always, I'm joined by Adam Kirkchen. And Adam, we were just talking about it. We're here. You can smell it. You can taste it. Football is back. And this week kind of feels like the kickoff of the 2018 season, even though we're still a couple months away.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. There's a lot of intrigue around this team. There's a lot of intrigue around the entire season. I think after the draft and everything and the OTAs, it's going to be fun to see how some of these rookies do, both with the Pats and all these quarterbacks that were taken with other teams as well. So I think it'll be a fun preseason. I was tweeting the other day about how Lamar Jackson's going to just put on a show with the Ravens, and everybody's going to be calling for Flacco to be benched.
He's going to be a preseason Pro Bowler, Lamar Jackson.
God. I mean, is there any more lock than that, like him playing well?
I feel like if you can bet in Vegas who's going to lead the preseason in passing yards, Lamar Jackson's got to be like even odds.
And rushing, you know.
Yeah.
He's gonna kill it. But we've got some Patriots things to discuss.
Yeah, we always do. And it's a good point, though. There seems to be a lot of intrigue just in general around the entire league, 1 through 32. It's going to be a really competitive league this year, I feel like, with a lot of teams set at the quarterback position, or at least they think that they're set with rookies or younger players in that position, and really just a lot of talent across the entire landscape of the league. You listen to some of these national podcasts that cover the whole league, and it's like, it's crazy. Every team has a storyline. There's really not a single team that you can just say, there's nothing to talk about with that team. Let's just move on and talk about another team. It's pretty remarkable. Even teams like the Browns these days have all sorts of intriguing storylines, about them and whatnot. So it's a really exciting season, and it trickles right to the top, at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, getting kicked off this week. We're not going to talk too much about any, lingering drama or anything like that. But, this is going to be an interesting season, to say the least, to see if they can kind of put all that behind them and move forward here. But what we're going to do today is we're just going to go through, we'll call it five burning questions for training camp. Just some of the position battles for the most part that, are definitely going to be on the radar going into Pat's camp here. We're taping this on Tuesday night, so we're almost there, just a couple of days away. But let's start with what I think, in my opinion, at least for, the Super Bowl odds of this team right now, the biggest question mark is, the offensive line. Tons of talent on the offensive line, tons of options. You can make this work in 10 different ways, plugging and playing guys in different spots. But there's, kind of some uncertainty of who those five best guys are going to be. And specifically, I think it's kind of a trickle-down theory of who's going to play left tackle, and then everything else is kind of going to fall into place from there.
Yeah, I think left tackle's the big question mark, because you saw the report, I think it was from Jeff Howe, saying that Marcus Cannon will be ready.
Yep.
And sort of 100%. So if that's the case, then I would pencil him in at right tackle. I'm not sure if they want to move him over to the left side. My guess would be no. What I think is, when they drafted Isaiah Wynn, they drafted him in mind of putting him at left tackle, or possibly supplanting the spot at left guard with Joe Tooney. But I think he can play tackle. So, if he's ready by game one, I think he could be your starter at left tackle. Now, there's other options there. I mean, you could put Adrian Waddle there. You could put Cole Crossed in there. I mean, both of those guys are guys that they like, because they've either, played significantly, or, in Cole Crossman's case, they kept him off the practice squad, and they usually do that for a reason. So, but I still think, you know, if they like what they have with Tooney still enough, then they, you know, why spend a first round draft pick on an offensive lineman if you're not going to, you know, move him to left tackle? So, you know, I can see them moving, you know, Wynn somewhere else, or even starting him on the bench and, you know, starting Waddle there at left tackle to begin with, and then sort of, you know, grooming Wynn for that spot right away. But I think there's a good chance you see Isaiah Wynn at left tackle. I mean, obviously there's Trent Brown too. I forgot to mention him. But there's something about him and him being so out of shape, I'm not so keen on, you know, him coming right in and starting.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest question here is how much do Belichick and Dante Scarnecchia value consistency from, you know, basically only using one or two different combinations for the entire season, you know, barring injury, of course. If that is kind of what they're looking at, then I think that you could see a guy like Isaiah Wynn just start right off the bat at left tackle and just go the whole way. But if they're looking to kind of have a stopgap instead, where a guy maybe plays for the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season, I think Trent Brown is really the guy that could really start week one and they'd feel like they at least have a veteran in that spot that isn't going to be a disaster. And a guy that they kind of know what they're going to get at. I mean, this is guy, Trent Brown, who was one of the best pass protecting tackles in all of football last year. Pro Football Focus had him as the fifth rated offensive tackle in pass protection all of last season. He gave up one sack and 415 pass blocking snaps, which is incredible. And when you really watch his, you know, technique, he's very good with his hands. He's one of the better hand usage guys that I saw that I watched last year, including the guys in the draft, and a very, very good length and good kick slide, light on his feet. But obviously that, you know, the conditioning and staying healthy and being able to play 16 to 19 games has been a concern with him. And that's kind of why San Francisco gave up on him. So maybe the case is that Trent Brown is the guy early, and then Isaiah Wynn is kind of the guy that brings it home once he kind of gets his feet wet in the league and whatnot. Now, really, the thing that I think is very interesting is what's going to end up happening with Joe Tooney, because I think they really like Tooney. I think they liked him when they drafted him, obviously, but at the same time, he has not really improved and didn't really play particularly well last year either. And in pass protection, he continues to be a pretty big liability, especially guys that bring power, at the point of attack. It's been a big issue for him, you know, pretty much his whole career handling power in pass protection sets, which nowadays with all the defensive tackles that rush the passer and when they line up guys inside that maybe typically line up on the edge more often than not. You know, there's just so many different variations of pass rushes these days and a lot of exotic schemes that you really need to have five guys that can pass protect. And Tooney has really just been a liability, and Mason's not really the best pass protector, you know, either. So having two guys that can't really pass protect is not really a great formula. So Isaiah Wynn is, you know, it's funny that we're even talking about this because this is a guy that was one of the best pass protectors and run blockers in the entire FBS last year in the SEC, and because he's a little short and his arms aren't, you know, quite long enough, where, you know, it's let's move him inside at this level, you know, and we talked about this a lot during the draft and whatnot after they took him. But I really think that, you know, Isaiah Wynn has a really good chance to start in two different spots, but I really think that he has a chance to supplant Joe Tooney as a starting left guard, because I think their five best offensive linemen is what I'm getting at involves Trent Brown and Marcus Cannon at the tackle spots to start with. And then you have Mason Andrews and ideally Isaiah Wynn at left guard. Maybe Joe Tooney becomes a trade chip. You know, it's not out of the question for Belichick to trade a player for player or a player for a pick during training camp in August. We saw him do it a couple times last year and do it in the past a bunch of times. So maybe Joe Tooney becomes the odd man out and becomes a trade chip. Who knows? But yeah. I just think that those five guys, you know, I feel just based off what they either did in college or what they did last year on tape, are the five guys, best guys that they have on the roster to play offensive line. And sometimes, you know, it's just about finding the right combination. to it. And you know, maybe those five guys can kind of come together. And even though not one of them is necessarily your prototypical NFL left tackle, he can still get the job done.
Yeah, I feel like with Brown, the only reason why I'm you know, hesitant with him is, you know, the conditioning part and the fact that he's good pass blocker, but it seemed like the Niners just sort of let him walk. And, you know, that always raises a red flag to me where it's just like, yeah, you know, a team like that, you know, we don't need him, okay? So that, you know, that seems like, it seems suspicious, right?
Right. I mean, they drafted Mike McGlinchey top 10, ninth overall or whatever it was, the left tackle from Notre Dame who's going to start day one. But whenever a guy like Kyle Shanahan gives up on an offensive player, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, it's such a smart coach. What was it that he saw that he didn't like, or was it the conditioning or what have you? Because when you just watch the tape and when he's actually out there, he played mostly right tackle, but even when he played that one game at left tackle, he was pretty solid too. So you look at it and you're kind of like, well, you know, what is it that is wrong with him? The conditioning was obviously the big question mark that all of us have heard as soon as they acquired him, was that was kind of the big thing. So we'll see. And, you know, I think the good news for Patriots fans and for the Patriots' success this year is that they have plenty of talent in both interior offensive linemen and tackle options. They got a bunch of guys. So really what it's going to come down to is Dante Scarnecchia and Belichick kind of weeding through, and Josh McDaniels kind of weeding through who are the five best. And in years past, I mean, remember, was it 2014 where they started Jordan Devey it takes a little bit of time to kind of figure out where that goes. So you never know.
Yeah. And the thing, going back to your Tooney comments, was it's so true. I mean, you know, he's just not a huge guy, you know, and right. When you look at him, he gets pushed back into, you know, the backfield too many times. And if you're an offensive guard and you're going up against defensive tackles, you can't have that problem, because that's what defensive tackles are. They're powerful guys.
Right.
Their power moves all the time. I mean, it's not like they're, you know, finesse guys in the middle of the defensive line.
Right.
So, you know, if Wynn could slide in there to begin with and beat him out, you know, that I don't see Wynn as somebody who has a problem anchoring down and battling with these big defensive tackles, even as a rookie.
I just think it putting Wynn there kind of it elevates the pass blocking skill of the entire offensive line over a guy like Tooney.
Right.
It is really what it does. And like I said earlier, you know, going into the Super Bowl, not to harp on this one play, I know it pains Patriots fans enough, but going into the Super Bowl, the Eagles coaching staff and the Eagles defensive line were well aware that Shaq Mason and Joe Tooney were not great in pass blocking. And what they did is they picked their spot really well to move Brandon Graham inside, but they had that plan for weeks, you know, to kind of go with that type of pass rush at some point where they move a guy inside that can really rush the passer and kind of rush on one of those guys and end up being Mason. So having two of those guys be a liability, every coach in the league and every team in the league is game planning to get pass rushers in those guys' faces when they can do it, because they know A, that they can't block very well, and B, that Tom Brady and most quarterbacks hate getting pressured right in up the middle of right at their face. You know, you have that edge pressure, it's a little bit easier to avoid, but that pressure right up the middle is not so much. So I think that it would be nice to see those five guys and see if those guys can work together to really put together what I think can be a really one of the better pass blocking offensive lines the Patriots have had in, you know, quite some time here.
Right. I agree. And I think, like you hit on it before, they have depth. They've got guys, proven guys. I mean, if you're talking about a guy like Trent Brown, who might not be the first five, then, you know, you're looking at a pretty deep offensive.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to the next question here. So we know that Stephon Gilmore is going to be CB1 starting week one for the Patriots. And there. We don't know much else about the cornerback position behind that. There's, again, it's kind of a similar situation where there's just a lot of options and they're kind of just going to have to weed through them all, read off some of them here. So the vet options that they have are, you know, obviously Eric Rose back, Jason McCourty in the Joneses, John and Cyrus Jones. Cyrus Jones obviously starting the season on PUP. I think John Jones is on PUP too, yeah. Isn't he? So both of those guys will see, wait and see, but I think John Jones especially has a really good chance to make this team. And then you have the young options, you know, the rookies, Duke Johnson, Kean Crossan, J.C. Jackson, a UDFA signing, and then Ryan Lewis, a UDFA signing from last year that they seem to really like. So, again, tons of options, but there's really only one guy who I can say right now his spot is secured, and that's Stephon Gilmore, even though I think, you know, guys like Duke Dawson and Eric Rowe are probably pretty close to roster locks, but it's just a matter of how much they're going to play.
Yeah, you know, I feel like it's the same thing. Like, you've got a ton of good players there. Like,
yeah.
I feel like if you can get the Jason McCourty of, you know, past Jason McCourty's, then you're in a pretty good spot. I mean, I think he would be a pretty good second or third corner, you know, if he's what he's been. The only question is, what is he going to be that, you know, like, and I really like Eric Rowe, to be honest, as a non top corner. I think he's long. I think he can match up with taller receivers pretty well. You know, I don't think he's like perfect, you know, I don't think he's like a shutdown guy by any means. But I think he's certainly serviceable back there. Like you've been tweeting about with Jonathan Jones, I also really like him. I think he's one of the best tacklers on the team. If he's right up there, and I think he works well in the slot. I'm not thinking that Cyrus Jones is gonna, you know, turn around and become some great player. I think Duke Dawson's gonna make the team, and as everybody knows who follows me, I'm crazy about Kean Crossan.
Right.
So, I think he makes the team, and I think he eventually makes a big impact because not just because of his athleticism, I think he has great technique, and I think he's got great instincts. So, you know, when you look at all those guys,
football player, Kean.
Yeah, I just love him. I think he's fantastic. So, you know, I think all those guys that make, you know, but you know the way the Patriots play. You know, they'll sometimes roll out 3-4 safeties, you know. So it does muddy the waters when you're talking about how many corners either make the team or how many corners are on the field at a certain time against a different spread offense.
Right. I think that's a very good question there is, you know, what do they go with as their true nickel slot corner or third cornerback? Because really, Eric Rowe and Jason McCourty, I view both those guys as boundary outside corners.
Yeah.
Right? And Rowe, I think, is a guy that is kind of getting slept on a little bit. I agree with you 100% with what you said, that as a number two corner, Eric Rowe is fine. He's a very serviceable number two corner, especially for the way that the Patriots play coverage in the secondary, where they usually help out on the number two corner a whole lot with safety help over the top, and they kind of rely on Gilmore to shut guys down on the other side. They've been doing that for a long time when it was Butler's responsibility or Darrell Revis's responsibility or Aqib Talib or whoever it might have been, you know, down the line. That was kind of their formula, was the number two gets a little bit of safety help over the top, sometimes a double, sometimes they do a cone coverage or a robber or something like that. And then on the other side, you know, the number one guy is kind of relied upon to be a shutdown guy, which I think Stephon Gilmore is 100% is a shutdown guy. So I think that Eric Rowe has every, you know, all the ability in the world to kind of be that number two corner on the outside behind Stephon Gilmore. Jason McCourty, I really liked what he did with Cleveland last year. I'm a little bit worried about him playing in a man scheme. A lot of the things that he did well in Cleveland was in zone. Obviously, in Tennessee, he ran a lot more man, and they kind of ran him out of town because he wasn't doing so good with it. So now he's going to come back to New England, be a little bit more man coverage heavy, see how he handles that. Obviously, the stuff with his brother, with Devin being on the team and being obviously Devin McCourty, it's questionable whether or not the Patriots really want to go down the road of cutting Jason McCourty or trying to trade him or something like that. You know, you don't want to piss Devin off too much, who's the captain and, you know, big time player on this team. So you don't want to do that. But the question of the matter is are they going to go with a true slot corner this year, or are they going to just go with their three best? Because they've done both variations, right, where they've just put the three best corners on the field. Sometimes they had Eric Rowe in the slot. You know, sometimes it was Patrick Chung alone in the slot. Or are they going to let a guy like a Duke Dawson or a John Jones or a Keon Crossan have a chance to be a true slot nickel cornerback? So I think that that's really kind of where the depth and where who they keep and who they don't keep is really going to make a difference. Do they view Duke Dawson as solely a cornerback, or do they view him more as like a Patrick Chung role type guy where he's kind of an in-the-box hybrid safety slot defender, you know, doing it all kind of? I don't know. We'll wait and see. Those are kind of the things that we get to work out, you know, over the next couple months and whatnot. But I think that Eric Rowe's spot on this team is pretty safe. I just don't see how he all of a sudden gets the rug pulled out from underneath him. And, you know, Jason McCourty, I think, is pretty safe, too, because I just don't see them ruffling any feathers. And I think that he's a good enough pro still at this stage of his career to make it work. So really what it comes down to is are the rookies. I think Duke Dawson's your second round pick. I assume that he's going to be on the team. You know, that seems like a pretty good lock. So really what it comes down to are the guys like the Joneses and Keon Crossan. And a lot of people like JC Jackson out of Maryland, who's a UDFA, and every year a UDFA makes the roster. So you never know who it's going to be. And then Ryan Lewis is a guy that they held around on the practice squad last year, paid a little bit of extra money to keep him here. And he's played a lot as a starter in minicamp. Obviously don't want to look too much into that, but they gave him all the opportunities in the world to kind of make, you know, something out of himself here. So a lot of competition, and that's something that, you know, we're going to go over a lot of different things here today. And one of the main things that, whether it was the offensive line discussion that we just had or this cornerback discussion, you know, not when you look at it on paper, you're not, none of these names necessarily jump out at you as Pro Bowl caliber players or anything like that, but there's just a lot of competition, a lot of guys that are NFL caliber players and NFL caliber starters that are going to be competing for, you know, just a couple of spots here. So the cornerback position is a lot like that, where they just have bodies, and it's just going to be a matter of, you know, kind of weeding through the ones that they decide are, you know, they're going to keep and which ones they're going to let go.
Yeah, and I think you hit on a big one with Dawson and where and how they use him. You know, just from watching him, you know, as, you know, after they drafted him and going through the film, and I think he's way more effective, you know, closer to the line of scrimmage and in the box and stuff like that. I don't think you want Duke Dawson on the outside or you know deep in coverage or anything like that. You want him, you know, sort of close to the box. I think that's where he's best. I think you can expose him in other ways that way, in other ways.
Well, his makeup speed isn't great, and his hips don't flip very well to turn and run with guys. Right. So putting him out on the boundary is a little dangerous, but inside he's pretty twitchy and he's pretty quick over the middle, and he's got great football instincts and IQ. So that is kind of where you keep him closer to the ball, where he can keep his eye on the ball, eye on the quarterback, and it gets a little bit better.
Yeah, and going back to Cross, and another thing you can do with him is he seems to me like a prime candidate. Like if Jonathan Jones isn't, you know, healthy, then Keon Crossan seems like a prime candidate to put, like, as a gunner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Super fast, and he's a great tackler. You know, you could.
They're a lot alike, Jonathan Jones and Keon Crossan. They're kind of clones of themselves, honestly.
Yeah, I really think that. You know, honestly, I feel like the Patriots, their secondary is in pretty good shape, the way I look at it. I mean, And you go back to somebody like Patrick Chung, you know, who's been so vital to how they play defense in the last few years. The way they've used him has been, you know, so unique, and he's been such a unique talent for them. You know, you wonder what exactly them drafting Duke Dawson does for him. You know, they see him as just, like you said, somebody who's gonna take over that role eventually, and does that start this year, depending on, you know, how well Dawson plays. But you know, honestly, I look at the secondary, and I think it's good. Now, they did get burned a lot in a few of these games last year, But I look at the individual pieces and I look at who they drafted and I feel like they have, you know, a good nucleus there. And I don't think they'll be, I think depth wise and, you know, star power wise, I think they've got some good pieces there.
Yeah, a lot of smart football players too. Duke Dawson, obviously they raved about his football IQ when they drafted him. Jason McCourty is a veteran player, very smart guy. And then obviously they have guys like Devin McCourty and Patrick Chung and Daron Harmon back there who have, you know, been in the system for a long time and are, you know, very high IQ players too. So maybe not necessarily jumping out at you with athleticism at some of the spots, but they have a lot of really smart guys, which I think is something to look forward to. And maybe they'll get a little bit of help with this next question here. How good is Derek Rivers? Now, this one I think is more just, you know, we got to wait and see on it. But part of the reason why their secondary and their linebackers got burned so much last year is because they didn't have a pass rush.
Right.
So in steps Derek Rivers, who obviously tore his ACL for, you know, just a little bit of you know, background here, tore his ACL last August in the preseason on a fluke kickoff in a practice, in a training camp practice. Really unfortunate injury for a really promising young player. This is a guy that has a school record at Youngstown State, 41 career sacks in his career there. So just a really promising guy, a guy that both of us are really high on and really liked in the draft process last year.
Yeah, I think you have to sort of temper your expectations when you look at sack numbers.
Agreed.
You know, coming off an injury and has never played in the NFL before. So, like, you know, if he gets, like, 5 sacks, then you consider that a success because, you know, I don't see, you know, him coming in and just, you know, getting, you know, 8 to 10 sacks in his rookie year. You know, like, I just don't see that. So, so I think you know, he'll be part of a rotation. I don't know which downs he'll be on, you know, what exactly the depth chart's going to look like. But I think by the end of the year, I remember, when Trey Flowers, you know, came back off his injury and had his big year, his sort of breakout campaign, it was sort of, you know, development over the course of the year, you know. And I think you'll see that with Rivers. I think, you know, he'll get some playing time and then over the second half of the season, you might see him sort of explode and sort of get into the backfield more often, pressure, sacks, that sort of thing. So I think Rivers, you know, you just temper up expectations because it's been so long since he's been on the field. You don't know how these guys recover from injuries. It's different for everybody. So I think he will be a threat off the edge. I think he will provide some improvement there. But I just don't, you know if, you know, people are going to get, you know, this, you know, Myles Garrett, like, type impact, you know, or something like that, you know what I mean?
Right, totally. And I think that, you know, it's important to temper expectations, but I think the biggest thing that I am looking for out of Derek Rivers is, can he add some timely pressure to this group? Because one thing last year is it wasn't necessarily that they didn't get a lot of pressure, it was that the pressure was never fast. Right. It was always, you know, a guy like Trey Flowers or Dietrich Wise who like to use their hands and their leverage and push guys back into the quarterback and do some pass rush moves that maybe take a little bit longer. Derek Rivers is a guy that can just get off. Right. And he can really get off the edge and he can bend and turn. That's kind of what I'm hoping that he's going to bring to this front seven, is not so much necessarily a guy that's going to come in and give them 10 sacks as a, you know, basically a rookie or anything like that, but more just a guy that can kind of come in pass rushing situations, third downs, you know, first and second and long, stuff like that, and really just get off the ball. And that's something that they haven't had really in a long time, is just a guy that can just, you know, beat you with speed and beat you around the edge and 2.5-3 seconds, you know. Yeah. That's just not something that they typically do, and a lot of people are going to say, well, that's not what they asked their guys to do and whatnot, and they've had guys like a Chris Long or someone like that might have been able to do that, but they didn't ask them to. That's well and good, and I don't think that the scheme is really going to change much or what they're going to expect out of guys just because Matt Patricia is now the head coach of the Lions. I don't think that it's still Bill Belichick's defense. So it's not, you know, the pass rushing schemes and stuff like that are not really going anywhere. I hope that Flores gets a little bit more creative with its blitzing than Patricia was, and maybe a little bit less predictable. But I don't think that it's really going to change all that much in terms of what they're overall, you know, trying to accomplish on a down-to-down basis. But I really think that what Derek Rivers adds, what they don't have elsewhere, is a guy that can really get off the ball and get it to the quarterback in a very fast fashion that isn't necessarily looking to kind of beat his lineman with a, you know, his hands and with leverage and all that kind of stuff, you know, that kind of takes a little bit more time.
Yeah, I think you sort of hit on it. Like, when you look at Rivers, you know, I think you want a guy who can come in on third down, especially.
Yeah.
Like third and long, third and medium, and be somebody who's really effective there. Because how many times last year did, you know, teams just hit those, you know, third downs, right, or third and longs like it was nothing?
And the Patriots got killed on third and mediums, especially in the Super Bowl. It was kind of as exacerbation of the problem all year. Those like third and fives and third and sixes, because they couldn't get immediate pressure on the quarterback.
Right.
So they were, you know, the quarterbacks are having 3 or 4 seconds on third and five. They're going to find an open guy for 5 yards.
Yeah. And, you know, if Rivers can be somebody who, like you said, can get a little bit faster in there, then, you know, that'll be a huge help. You know, even if he's not getting sacks per se, but forcing, you know, bad throws or got the quarterback, right, to throw the ball away and, you know, and, you know, chase down some of these mobile quarterbacks from behind, you know.
That's a good point, too. Yeah, the guy that can kind of spy a little bit potentially maybe with that kind of athleticism and do that kind of stuff, too.
Yeah. So, I, you know, I think, you know, like we said, temper expectations, stuff like that. But he really can have a pretty big impact once he gets his feet under him.
Yeah, we keep saying it, but don't look at the sack numbers and just, you know, if Derek Rivers only has 4.5 sacks by the end of this year, like, let's not look at those and just be like, oh, he had a bad, you know, first season with the Patriots, you know, healthy season or whatever. You know, look at some of the advanced metrics, look at kind of what the impact is on the rest of the defensive line. I think you're going to see a guy that they finally might be able to have a guy other than Trey Flowers that really can get off the ball. So that would be good news. All right. This next one here is, we know who's going to be the starting quarterback, I think, you know, come week one. But the backup quarterback, we got ourselves a battle, or do we not have ourselves a battle is the question.
I still think Corey's got to be the guy. I mean, he's got starting experience. He's played in, you know, in bigger games before. I mean, like, Etling is still a project, in my opinion, you know. I mean, the preseason will tell us a lot, you know, like, it, you know, just how far he's come. I mean, it seems like he's working really hard, and he's taking a lot of instruction, and he's even shown improvement throughout the OTAs a little bit. So, you know, even in that short period of time, I think Patriots fans have to be a little bit more encouraged than they were when they saw this guy's name come across on draft night. So, but still, the way I look at it is this, all right, you know, what do you want? Who do you want under center? You know, if Brady goes down, do you want a 7th round draft pick who's a rookie, or do you want a guy who's started games before in the NFL?
Right.
In my opinion, that's an easy, it's a no-brainer. So, you know, had they drafted somebody earlier on, like, you know, or, you know, had, you know, had they done what I wanted, which is draft Lamar Jackson, then this would be a different answer. But, you know, right now I just kind of feel like you have to go with stability, you have to go with experience, and that's Hoyer. And I also think that, like, you know, with Etling, he's, like, depending on how he plays in the preseason, even so, like, I feel like he's somebody that they can stash on the practice squad, like we've talked about.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't think he'll necessarily get scooped up by another team.
Yeah, I think the big thing is, you know, a lot of Patriots fans, Patriots people are always like, well, if Tom Brady gets hurt, the season's over anyways. So, you know, or if Tom Brady's not starting, the season's over anyways. So who really cares if who's the backup quarterback at this stage, if it's not going to be a guy that we think is going to be the heir apparent? You know, it's not a Lamar Jackson. It's not a Jimmy Garoppolo. It's not even a Jacoby Brissett. But the thing is that, you know, the game still happen. You know, even if Brady gets hurt, they're still going to play the games. And, you know, if Danny Etling, I think the biggest thing, and I did a film review on Brian Hoyer and broke down his starts last year with San Francisco, and I was way more impressed with him in San Francisco, you know, after I rewatched it this offseason than I thought I was originally about his play when they acquired him last season. The thing that I really think is the biggest difference, well, two things. One thing is the downfield accuracy is in Hoyer's favor by a landslide. Just, you know, throwing the ball accurately downfield. Hoyer actually graded out extremely well, both in my charting and Pro Football Focus's, you know, in terms of throwing the ball downfield and his accuracy downfield in San Francisco. The other thing that he's, you know, arm and shoulders above Danny Etling with is with his processing speed. And this is something that we talked about a little bit when they drafted Etling, was just that a lot of the times he was triggered, you know, wouldn't pull the trigger on a throw, wanted to really see the guy open, didn't want to kind of just try to anticipate the throw and throw the ball in there into some tight coverage, things like that. Brian Hoyer didn't have that problem. Brian Hoyer also didn't have any processing issues, where with Danny Etling, you could see kind of the head spinning a little bit sometimes and stuff like that at LSU. That would have to really be a big improvement for me, both downfield accuracy and processing speed, for him to supplant Brian Hoyer and for the Patriots to have any kind of, you know, faith that Danny Etling could be Tom Brady's backup. Honestly, unless Danny Etling, and a lot of the times what happens with this offseason stuff, people hear, oh, he's a hard worker, he's the first one in, last one out. And they kind of listen to this stuff. He's a seventh-round pick. Nobody believes in him. And it sounds a lot like Tom Brady, right? You know, this guy showed up, and he was the hardest worker. He was a sixth-round pick. Everybody thought he was going to suck, all these things. And it's like, you know what? Lightning doesn't strike twice. You know, like, Tom Brady is an anomaly. He's an exception to the rule.
Yeah.
So just because Danny Etling's going and working his butt off does not mean in any stretch of the imagination that he's going to turn into anything close to Tom Brady.
Right. So, and people also kind of forget that Tom Brady in college was a lot better than Danny Etling was in college. I mean, it's not an apples to apples comparison.
Right. In any way.
Yeah. So, and like you said, it's the processing speed. But I mean, Etling really struggled in college with that thing where, you know, he waited until a guy was open before he
played.
It was a really big problem. And yeah, I know that it was in the SEC, but I mean, that's college. I mean, what's it going to be like even in the preseason against a lot of guys that won't even make the league? You know, that's going to be even tougher, you know, against live rush. I mean, he holds on to the ball too long and all this stuff. I mean, he's a project. I mean, let's face it. There's no way he can come in as a rookie and, you know, be the guy, you know, if Brady goes down. You'd rather have Hoyer, trust me. It's just,
yeah.
But I'm not saying he can't improve. He is a hard worker. He's got a ton of the tangibles that you want, like his toughness. I can't remember how many times he got leveled in college. And,
oh, God.
And then come, yeah.
But part of the reason why he got leveled in college, like you said, is because he loved to hang on to the ball.
You're right.
Yeah. And he didn't really have great awareness in the pocket either when guys were coming after him. You know, a lot, that is a disaster waiting to happen if they have to put him out there, you know, anytime soon, in my opinion. And I don't think that one training camp, one off-season OTA, one mini camp, I don't think that that's enough. It's just not enough. For them to kind of take this guy to that next step where he can be a backup quarterback. I think that long-term, he has a chance to be a backup quarterback in this league. I don't know if he has a chance to be a starter. I would doubt it unless he improves a lot and really improves his throwing mechanics a lot. But maybe he could be, a serviceable backup. But this season, I think that you got to go with Hoyer. All right. Let's hit on this last one, which is pretty similar, I would say, to the cornerback discussion. And that's the wide receiver depth chart, which basically is Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, and everybody else right now. Yeah. Kind of similar to, you know, how Gilmore is kind of alone in that cornerback depth chart. Obviously, a lot of bad news coming out in the last 24 hours about Malcolm Mitchell, who we all love on this podcast. But unfortunately, another knee procedure. He's going to miss some time again. And it sounds like the Patriots might even try to trade him if they can get any sort of compensation for him at this point. So you got Jordan Matthews, you got Cordrell Patterson, you got Kenny Britt, who's the offseason trope alert on Kenny Britt. these days. You got Philip Dorsett, who I wrote about today, Braxton Berrios, Riley McCarron, two slot guys that are a little bit younger. Obviously, Berrios I just drafted. You know, a lot, again, a lot of bodies, not a ton of them jumping out at you, but a lot of bodies.
Right, and that's kind of how I look at it. Is that's a, like, I feel way more confident about some of these other position groups than I do at the receiver position. I just don't see any of those second level guys being somebody you can really count on. Like, that's the you know, one of the, you know, major things about this Mitchell trade is because, like, when Mitchell was out on the field, you knew what you were getting. You know, like, he really came into his own his rookie year, and then obviously, like, the injury concerns came to life, and it's really too bad because, you know, not only is he a good player, but he's a good guy. Obviously, he's easy to root for. So that stinks with Mitchell. But, you know, some of the other guys, like, you know, I think the way they're going to use Patterson isn't just as a receiver, and I think he can be effective on these jet sweeps and, you know, all these different creative ways of getting the ball, like these little wide receivers, like bubble screens and stuff like that. I think they can, you know, they can use him that way, and he can be really effective. But as a pure, like, you know, running routes, finding the open space receiver, I don't know, you know, what they're going to get out of him. You know, like, you know, obviously, I'm sure he's great on a go route, like just running past a cornerback and, you know, beating over the top coverage because he's so fast. But, you know, I'm not quite sure what they're going to get out of some of these guys. You know, it's so funny, though, like with Berrios, like, I love him, though. You know, I really like Braxton Berrios. I loved him at Miami. I think he's, you know, he's one of those guys that everybody, you know, mocked to the Patriots because he's, you know, just that type of receiver. And, you know, I like Berrios a lot. I think it would be I wouldn't be surprised to see him make the team. He's just the type of player that's good in this offense, and he's just reliable. I mean, when I watched him in Miami, whenever they needed a big play or, you know, just a third down conversion or something in the red zone, he was the guy.
Yeah.
You know, so, but everybody else, I'm just not quite sure, you know. Like, I mean, just like going back to Patterson, I just don't know, you know, how well he's going to vibe with Brady, how well he's going to grasp the offense. I think he's an explosive weapon, but he's really one of those boom or bust guys for me, where if he booms, then you got a real, real weapon, man. He's so fast. And, you know, like, having a guy that's that fast is, you know, a perfect replacement for some of the Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, I really think that Patterson, I hate to use the word gadget player, but he is a gadget player on offense. And he's kind of the type of guy that I more see them using either as a decoy or, like you said, in those jet sweeps, bubble screens, and just straight goes. You know, he's not going to run great routes. He's not going to be the type of guy that they're going to be able to throw out there 70, 75 snaps a game and watch him run routes all day. It's just going to get ugly, and maybe in the situation where they have to do that because of injuries or whatnot, then it comes down to that. But I just doubt that that's kind of what their plan is. So my question with this group really is are they going to keep around just kind of one of everything so they kind of have some options? That's kind of where I'm leaning, where they have a guy like Phil Dorsett, who is kind of that speed burner, like a Cooks. I would more compare him to, like, kind of like a Dante Stallworth or someone like that that they've had in the past, where they kind of, or Jabbar Gaffney, another good one, where they kind of have to just have that burner on the outside to keep defensive honest and kind of keep a safety over the top sometimes and take away some of the coverages in the middle of the field from Gronkowski and Edelman and Hogan and the running backs. And that's kind of just a role that he's going to play. Is he going to be Brandon Cooks, where he's demanding double teams and beating single coverage and things like that on his own? Absolutely not. But within a scheme, I think he can play that role of take the top off the defense, get open when schemed open, that type of thing. Then with Kenny Britt, he's really the big X factor, right? You know, is he going to be a guy that they can rely on? Is he going to be 2016 Kenny Britt, or is his career over? You know, that's kind of where we're at with him. You're kind of at a crossroads. If he's close to 2016 Kenny Britt, then he's, you know, their number three receiver right now, probably just off of talent alone. A lot of people like Jordan Matthews a lot. I think that he has a chance to kind of play in the slot a little bit. He's a different type of slot receiver, obviously, a bigger body guy. So really the question for me is do they decide to keep Jordan Matthews, or do they go with their traditional slot receiver that they've gone with in the past with the Riley McCarron or a Berrios? I don't know if they can keep all three of those guys. It just doesn't seem like there's enough space on the team for all three of those guys. So maybe it ends up being that Berrios and McCarron, they try to sneak one of those guys onto the practice squad and they take their chance that one of the two will fall into their, you know, back into their laps. I don't know. But I think that what they have here is they have, you know, the smaller, fast guy in Dorsett. They have the big body guy in Britt. They have the gadget player in Patterson. And then they have some slot options in McCarron, Berrios, and Matthews. So it's going to kind of be, you know, matchup-based, game plan-based, you know, system. Like it's always kind of been behind Edelman and Hogan. So there's some good depth there. Obviously, none of these guys I don't think are going to come in and be 07 Randy Moss anytime soon. But there's at least some depth there and some options of what kind of football they want to play. You know, it's Kenny Britt and Philip Dorsett are both big play guys, but are do it in a very different way. You know, Britt does it with his size and with his contested catch ability, and Dorsett does it with his speed. So they can kind of have a little bit of both worlds with those two colliding there.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's strange. I mean, with Dorsett and Patterson, you see a lot of the same plays with them, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, like Dorsett, you'll see a lot of the jet sweeps and goes and stuff like that.
Long over, big over routes and yeah. Posts and stuff like that.
Yeah, so so you could see, you know, like Patterson make the team and bump Dorsett off the roster if they like one of those other guys. And, you know, it's so funny with preseason. I mean, can't you just sort of see Berrios, like, being a fan favorite, you know, after, like...
Well, Austin Carr was the fan favorite last year, right?
Yeah, like, I feel like there's something like that every year. You know? Even though he's technically not a wide receiver, I kind of look at him this way just because of his build. Is Jacob Hollister.
Right.
Because you don't look at Jacob Hollister as like this prototypical...
He's not an inline tight end. He's definitely a move tight end.
Right. So, like, and the way that people were... I mean, he had a good preseason last year, but then, you know, in OTAs, people were raving about him even more, about his circus catches and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could see him getting on the field before some of these other guys. Because he's been in the system, and it seems like he's playing well, you know. And that, of course, you know, depends on how many tight ends they keep and stuff like that. But he's the name you got to throw in the mix too, because he's a big guy. He's got great hands, and you know, he's been here. So you know, all this is going to get sorted out. But like you said, I don't think you're going to look at any of these guys with the potential of maybe Patterson, like. Like, I don't think Patterson's going to, like you said, be a Randy Moss, but, like, I can see Patterson being, like, you know, a total major impact guy with his speed, you know,
yeah.
If his, like, his ceiling's higher than everybody else's, in my opinion. So,
yeah.
But I just don't see anybody else being, like, all right, well, look out, here comes so-and-so, you know?
Right, right.
I think this offense is still going to run through the familiar names.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, and you know, just two things to wrap it up here. First thing is that whenever people look at this Patriots depth chart at wide receiver, except maybe last year before Edelman got hurt, everybody just kind of goes, meh, all right, it's okay. But really, Rob Gronkowski is their number one receiver. So
yeah.
Everything kind of trickles down from that. And just because he's a tight end doesn't mean that it's any different than him being a number one receiver like Antonio Brown is or Julio Jones is. You know, he's on that level. So basically, it's kind of you're looking at it as a whole pass catching arsenal. You know, it's not just the wide receiver position, like you said with Jacob Hollister. They can pull a guy like that in. They can pull Gronk in. You know, there's so many more guys to this, the running backs to this equation, than just looking at the wide receivers as Tom Brady's only pass catchers. And I think the other thing with Patterson, you know, and Dorsett, who kind of two guys that are both burners, you know, the Patriots have kind of put in a lot more vertical passing schemes in recent years than they kind of did early on in the Belichick Brady era, and they kind of have gone to some of these college schemes, you know, these big Yankee concepts, these mesh concepts with these big over routes and post routes to, you know, cross up guys downfield, and they've tried to get more chunk plays out of those types of schemes where they can kind of just get easy deep targets for Tom Brady, who is not necessarily known for the being the best deep ball thrower in the league. but if you get him a wide open guy 50 yards downfield, he's certainly going to hit him. So I think that that's one thing to look at is they got to, if they want to continue to do that type of scheme, and this is what I wrote about with Philip Dorsett today, is if you want to continue to do those types of schemes where they're going to attack the defenses vertically, whether it's, you know, a Yankee or a deep over or something like that, then you're going to have to keep a couple of those guys still on the roster. You know, a lot of people want to make Chris Hogan into a deep threat. I get, you know, I understand that he had a high yards per reception in, you know, 2016. He's just not a deep threat like Patterson or Dorsett is. They're just not on the same level in that regard. And Julian Edelman's certainly not a strength of his game either. So if they want to kind of continue to do some of those things where they really got a lot of chunk plays, they're going to have to keep a burner on the outside on this roster now that, you know, Cooks is obviously gone. So it's going to come down to one of those guys. I really think that Patterson, Britt, and Dorsett are three guys that are going to be tough to cut. Britt, it's going to be a matter of health and kind of reliability. You know, just is he going to be there every day? Is he going to practice hard every day? That kind of thing. But I really think that those three guys are proven that they can at least play a role within an offense or within a whole team, in the case of Patterson, to the point where they're NFL caliber players. So the question is really, you know, who else can sneak into the equation? Are they going to carry six? Are they going to carry seven? It's an interesting conversation. Obviously, we have a lot of time to break it all down, but there's just – it is a lot of bodies in a lot of different spots on this roster that are NFL-caliber dudes. You know, I mean, we went over the cornerback position, the offensive line, and the wide receivers today. We didn't even talk about, you know, running backs, for example, or they have three or four guys. So it's just a lot of – competition on this roster, and a lot of people, you know, look at this roster and they're like, okay, it's all right, you know, it's not on the par of the Rams or the Eagles or someone like that, because they don't have the name brands at the top of the roster the same depth necessarily as those other teams do. But 1 through 53, this is still one of the strongest rosters.
Yeah, 100%. You're gonna see guys that get cut that start on other teams.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, so I think that happens a lot. So I don't think that's any different. And that's what every football team wants is competition heading into this month. Is you want a lot of guys competing. You want guys who don't know if they're going to make the team or not, so they, you know, they get better. You know, the whole iron sharpens iron thing. I mean, I think that's what the Patriots have, and they're in a really good spot for that.
Yeah, and they have no real – you know, outside of kind of the guys that we talked about that are kind of, you know, stalwarts in this team now, the guys that are kind of competing for roster spots, have the Patriots have no reason to keep them. You know what I mean? Like, there's no salary cap implications. There's nothing like that. So this is a true blue open competition for these other roles. And it's a little bit uncertainty, but at the same time, I think that once it all kind of comes together, and no one better to kind of pull those strings, obviously, than Belichick, it's gonna look pretty good. All right. You got anything to plug, Adam?
I don't, we will, I think, what's our next podcast going to be? Is it going to be a roster?
I don't know yet. We'll see if there's any news. You know, obviously there's always news. Yeah. Hopefully no injuries, knock on wood. But yeah, we'll figure it out. We'll do one next week on some sort of training camp topic.
Yeah, something will come up. But yeah, I think we covered a lot of ground today. And you know, obviously, you know, every week things jump up, and I'm sure we're gonna do our projected 53 mans.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to do at least two of those probably. And hopefully have some good guests on them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're back here to stay now, I would say, you know, for the rest of the season. It's time to go, which is great. So we'll be back hopefully on a weekly basis moving forward. Obviously, as we just talked about, training camp breakdowns, 53-man roster discussions, preseason game reactions, all that good stuff, and from now until week one, and then hopefully get back into our weekly recap preview shows during the season, just like we did last year. So we're getting started here on the Naked Bootleg Podcast. We're back to football, and it's great to be back. Just two quick plugs for me before we sign off here. Go read my Philip Dorsett film review that I did. kind of going over some of the things that I discussed about his role as potentially a deep threat in the Patriots offense, replacing some of the things, obviously not going to be as good as Brandon Cooks, but replacing some of the things that maybe Cooks could do if they do decide to keep Dorsett on the roster. I'm also going to write something. I did one last year too, so we'll keep it going on the undrafted free agent streak that is nearing 14 straight years if they take another one of these UDFAs on the roster this year, which I don't think I do think is going to happen. I'd be pretty surprised to see that streak end, because it just seems like one of these guys always kind of, you know, sneaks their way onto the roster. So we'll see if that happens. I'll also write on a few candidates to keep the streak going. So look for that as well on Pat's Pulpit. But until then, signing off for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.